Kia ora, welcome to Asian in Aotearoa. I'm Jenna, and in this episode, I catch up with Ankita Singh. Ankita is a writer, documentary director, and award-winning theatre producer, and she made history as the first South Asian female playwright to be commissioned by Auckland Theatre Company last year with her debut action comedy play, Basmati Bitch. In this episode, Ankita talks about what she's currently working on, as well as her journey with writing and finding her voice, being comfortable with feeling alone, and much more. Enjoy. Well, welcome, Ankita.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Do you want to do a brief self-intro?
Yeah, kia ora. My name is Ankita Singh. I am a writer, so I do screenwriting and playwriting, and a producer. Produced a lot of theatre and some film stuff, and I'm also directing now, documentaries mostly. Oh, I'm also a photographer, and
she's a talented multidisciplinary.
Yeah, just multi-hyphenate, you know, like, yeah. Just a jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah, and then I just do a bunch of other shit as well, I guess. I've gotten back into drawing recently.
That's cool. Because yeah. I heard the interview with you and Kim Hill, and you did say that you...
Oh my God, I did, didn't I?
You did mention that. That was like a year ago.
Yeah, I'm getting hard into it. Cool. So hopefully in a year I can be like, I'm also an illustrator or graphic novelist. Mm. That's the aim. So it's going really well. I downloaded this course online. I'm just working my way through it. It's like a self-study, like,
yeah,
fine arts course, basically. So yeah, I'm really into that at the moment.
You mentioned it might be interesting to talk about your journey with writing, finding a voice, and finally mustering up the courage to put yourself out there.
Yes. Oh my God.
What helped you find your voice?
Oh, it's such a long story. Oh my God. You know, like, looking back on it now, I feel like it was always there, like me being a writer, but I never really thought of myself as a writer. But anyway, I guess I'll start like with the origin story. And I've said this before in like different interviews, but like I was like bullied quite badly like throughout school after we moved here. And like I was just a really introverted kid, and you know, I guess like a lot of us, like daydreaming constantly, and it's like sort of in your own world. And basically the thing that like sort of got me out of that was like doing this speech in high school in year 9 about doing your mum jokes. Which I'm surprised the teachers even let me get up there and say this in front of the whole year. So, you know, it was like a thing where you do it in class, and then the best people from their class, like,
yeah,
do this like competition in front of the whole year group, basically. And yeah, mine was just about how stupid your mum jokes were because they're so sexual and dumb. I was like, this comeback doesn't even make any sense. Like, someone would be like, oh, what are you doing in your locker? And you'll just be like, doing your mum. And it wasn't even that funny. It sounds really stupid now. But yeah, everyone thought it was fucking hilarious. Cracked up the whole year. And yeah, that basically made people like change their mind about me. Cause like to them, I was just this like weird fucking like introverted, bespectacled, you know, Indian girl. And I say Indian girl because, like, you know, a lot of the bullying was, like, weirdly racially motivated. But
What did you
go to? I went to Hillcrest High in Hamilton in Kirikiriroa. So, yeah, that's where it sort of happened. Oh, yeah. But I have to say I got bullied by everyone. So it was, like, the South Asians as well. So, you know, I'm staring at you guys, like... It wasn't just, you know, like, you know, I feel like in a lot of our narratives, we're always talking about how it's like, you know, oh, it's white people.
Yeah, but it was everyone.
But it was everyone. So you all suck. I'm just putting it out there. Anyway, this is such a tangent. But that I think that was the first time that I was like using my voice and like using comedy and humor to like humanize myself. And after that speech, like people came up to me and they were like, oh, I didn't know people with glasses could be funny. Or, like, I didn't know people with glasses could swear. And, like, it was just weird stuff like that. But anyway, I got, like, street cred, I suppose. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, obviously my best subjects were, like, media studies and drama and English. I don't know. Even after high school, I kind of just... I went to study communications at AUT because my parents, you know, were like, don't go to art school.
I did comms, too. I did the same.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sisters. At AUT? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What year?
I'm 10 years older than you.
Really? Oh, my God. What?
Yeah.
I would not have... So I thought we were the same age.
I am keeping that in.
Oh, God. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so I graduated 2008.
Oh, wow. That's when I was in year 8.
Yeah, great.
In middle school. Whoa. Well, I could never tell. I bet you still get ID'd everywhere you go.
It's been a while since I've been ID'd.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
But thanks.
That is surprising.
Great.
Asian don't raisin, as they say.
The skincare is working.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you did comms.
Yeah, so I did comms, and then I weirdly majored in creative industries, which was like, producing. It doesn't even exist anymore as a major. And I was just like, oh my God, artists are so exploited. I want to help. You know, because I was such a radical, like, lefty student. So yeah, I decided to become a producer. And then I ended up interning at Indian Ink Theatre Company, and I worked in marketing there. And yeah, I met Ahi because Indian Ink's office is in the same building as Basement's office. They're like across the corridor from each other in the Sunday School Union building. And I just see him wandering around.
I hate a legend.
Yeah, you know, like doing his weird thing where he's like touching his face and, you know, looking stressed. Yeah, we love you, Ahi. But yeah, and then he just came up to me one day and he's like, I heard you want to produce, like, I have this thing called First World Problems. Do you want to produce it? And he took out like a limb on, wait, is that the right phrase? Like, he gave me a
shot. Yeah, he went out on a limb.
He went out on a limb.
Yeah.
And he was just, I was just this random student, basically. And it was my first producing gig, and I got thrown in the deep end because we had, like, I don't know, like 3 weeks to pull it together for, like, was it Fringe or it was a Basement season? And yeah, I kind of just decided that I was going to be the person in the background who was, like, helping all these things happen. And, like, I loved it because I got to, like, uplift all these other voices and, like, make room for, you know, like, underserved creatives. Like, the first season of First World Problems, it had like, I don't know, 20 plus South Asian like creatives like get up there and tell their story. And yeah, I kind of just kept doing that. I worked with Nathan Joe on Rachel Chu, I Am Rachel Chu, which was like a Fringe thing.
Yeah,
with Amanda and Ravi and Angela. And yeah, then I Sims.
Yeah,
Selvarajan, like, she sort of like took me under her wing and like became my mentor, like producing mentor. And yeah, I did like Short and Sweet with her, and then assisted on like ChromaCon. And yeah, so it was a few years of just like bam bam bam, like hardcore producing. And it was like, oh my God, I almost like pretty much got burnt out. And then after a while, like, I realized, oh, because I'd always been a creative. So I just realized, like, oh, I was feeling kind of like, even though I was really enjoying helping people and creating work and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I just felt like my cup wasn't being filled anymore after doing that for a few years. Because, yeah, I'd always just been a creative and I wanted to do something creative. And producing is, you know, it's cool, but it's not like, it's creative problem solving, but I wouldn't say it's like, you know. It's just a different form of creativity, right? This is so random, but I got an internship to go to a work for CJ Culture Foundation through the Asia New Zealand Foundation. So I was like in Korea in this apartment on the heated floor one evening. Oh my God, that heated floor is amazing. Like, they're like...
Did you go by yourself?
I went with this other girl. And so two of us got picked to go be interns.
That is so cool.
It was amazing. It was like 3 months.
This time in Korea?
No, second time. I'd went because I'm a K-boo. Like, I'd been like for 2 weeks before with a friend and we were like learning Korean and all that sort of stuff. So it was my second time, but we were like working like in this like corporate like place. But it was super chill because we were just like the cute international interns that were just there to like, I don't know, give an international vibe to the office. But they were really nice to us and like, you know, they treated us really well. And and it was paid. So that was amazing. So I could just literally just like, even though I was working, I could just chill for like 3 months and actually think about what I wanted to do. And yeah, I was like lying on the floor of this apartment and I was just like, I need to fucking do something because I actually am not that happy. So I just like went online and I saw the master's program at AUT for screenwriting. And I was just like, let's just fucking do it. So I applied and here we are. So that was a very long story.
It was a good one though. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I should say, actually, before that, like, Sims had run this thing called the Ariza Playwrights Lab, and Bala helped produce that. Yeah, so they produced this Playwrights Lab, and I just applied because I had this idea for Basmati Bitch. I was like, what if rice was illegal? And then, like, I pitched it to Bala, and he was like, oh, this sounds good. Like, you know, you should apply for the thing. And yeah, I was just like forced to write. And I remember it was like in ATC's, like one of their studios, and like all these amazing actors who I can't remember all their names right now, but thank you to them. They like looked at my script and they like put so much like heart and soul into like reading the words out, taking it seriously, and like working on it, crafting it, and giving me feedback. And it was just such a like, it was such a crazy experience, because I was like, oh my God, like people are taking what I wrote seriously, even though it's like this ridiculous idea, but they are like emotionally connected to it, vibing it. I'm getting great feedback. Like, I just felt so validating, I guess is the word. Yeah, so that experience, I have to thank all those people who were there, like Dione, Sims, Bala. Like, that was actually the first experience where cognizantly I was like, oh my God, I could actually be a writer. Yeah, and then I went to Korea and the internship and all that sort of stuff happened. But that I can pinpoint it to that moment where I was like cognizant of like, oh my God, like people actually like what I'm doing. And now looking back on my life, when I think about the speech and like all this other stuff I did, I was like, oh, I guess I was always sort of, it was all about like finding my voice. Every time I've been brave enough to like show people who I am authentically, that's when things have transformed the most in my life. Like in year 9, when I was like brave enough to like get up there and like be funny, you know, and show people like my actual personality, it completely changed my whole high school experience. And when I was, I guess, brave enough to do that in our industry, like that suddenly changed everything for me.
You can see the payoff from getting a bit courageous.
Exactly. You summed it up perfectly. Yeah. Every time there's been a transformative moment in my life, it's from like having that courage to just fucking do it. Just put yourself out there. And yeah, I guess there's just something in there to wean. I guess the lesson is to not be afraid to use your voice, you know, when you can, you know, or when you can. I don't know, like just in general, I think using like your voice is like, everyone keeps saying it, right? Like stand up for, you know, injustice or what you believe in, or just in your personal life as well. It's like the most powerful tool a human has to like communicate, share ideas, touch people's hearts, change their minds about things. Anyway, that got really like, yeah, I hope that made sense.
It did. Do you still feel resistance to putting yourself out there?
Yeah, oh my God, so much. I feel so, and I've been trying to work through this with Mama, and I'm like, I feel so bad for like posting on social media. Like, I just don't post anymore at all, because I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like, it's this thing of like, who am I to put stuff out there or talk about myself? Or
so
like,
no.
You must, I need to ask you, like, how do you put yourself out there?
I hate it. What you're saying resonates so hard.
Why do you think that is?
I'm very uncomfortable with posting on social media.
Are you afraid of, like, saying the wrong thing?
I don't know if it's saying the wrong thing, or it's just that whole, like, who am I? Like, who really gives a shit? I'm so sick of, like, my own voice.
Even though it's literally just you putting out what you're already doing. Like, and I was talking to Marvin about this, and he was literally like, I just went back to my high school and I gave a talk about, which was a full circle moment for me. It was like, oh, going back to my school, talking to the art students, telling them about my career, and you know, like, you know how they have those leavers dinners for like the senior art students? So it was just going back and telling them about what I'm doing and how I got there. And I was supposed to post about it on social media and I didn't. Marvin's gonna be like, what the hell? But because his whole thing is like, you're just literally just stating facts. Like, this is like what you did, and you're just putting it out there. Like, you're already doing the work, and you're just putting it, like, you're not lying, you're not, like, talking yourself up. Like, it's just very, like, factual kind of thing, right? But I don't know, there's still a block.
I don't know
what it is.
How do we get talking about that?
It was, like, cringe and, like, not...
Or you've got like, a block on, like, putting yourself out there.
Yeah, like, because I don't want to be cringe and sincere. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I just need to get over myself, honestly.
I think we all do in some...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because I never think badly of like other people doing it. I'm just like, oh, cool. Now I have information about what's going on and what they're up to.
Yeah.
Unless they're being like assholes, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you think you'll be posting more on social media then?
I feel like you're going to hold me accountable.
I'm not going to. Just a curious question.
I will try. But I probably won't.
Well, this but is a I will try. Well, you're saying this is a segue into what's coming up for you.
Oh, yeah. That was a good segue.
Because you will have something to promote.
I do, actually. So Calvin and I made this action comedy for TVNZ called Give Me Babies. And it's like a action comedy about a mother-daughter duo, MMA duo, mixed martial arts. And yeah, basically the premise is like the daughter, who's played by Roxy Mojave, doesn't want to have kids, but she doesn't, is too afraid to tell her mom because, you know, she loves her mom and she wants to be like the perfect daughter. And the mom is portrayed by Celeste Wong. And so like logically, you know, the character played by Roxy, she's like, oh yeah, the logical thing to do is lie to my mom and go do an underground fight to make money so I can escape to Thailand. And then obviously, like, at the fight, she pisses off a bunch of gangsters who are played by some great stunties, including Tim Wong. And Mel is the baddie. Mel, oh my God, I blanked.
Mel, oh, Mel was in your, well.
Yeah, he was also in Basmati. Yeah. I just love him. Just love his evil British face. British accent. No, I should say, love his evil British accent is what I should say. Anyway. Yeah, so then she pisses them off and then there's like a big fat, there's a huge fight at her cousin's big fat Indian wedding is cool. What I should say. Yeah, so it's just like a, it's just a fun romp basically and it's coming out soon.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, but apart from that, I'm working on a new play. It's a horror play.
Yeah, Rabid.
Yeah. Bala's helping me develop it. And hopefully cool. We do a development season this year. I'm not sure. I mean, that's the aim, but let's see how we go. Yeah. And that's like sort of like a horror. Should have done some vocal warm-ups before this. It's like a horror magic realist play and it's set in a hill station in India. And a hill station's just like a town in the hills, which is like the Himalayan ranges. And turns out I have some ancestry to there, which was an interesting discovery to make.
How'd you find that out?
How did I find that out? You know, I just started, like, I feel like the older you get, maybe it's just me, the older I've gotten, the more curious I've become about, like, my grandparents, my parents, their lives, like, as humans, you know?
Yeah. Suddenly you're like, wait, these are people.
Yeah. Like, a few years ago, I was like, I don't even know my grandparents' names. Like, you know, because we always just called them Dadi, Dadu, Nani, Nanu, you know? And, like, our parents never bothered to tell us what their actual names was, which sounds really fucked up, I know, but, like, I just didn't know. So, like, I just asked my dad, I was like, what was your parents' names? And he was like, oh, your grandmother's Doris and your grandfather's Albert. And I was like, why do they have Christian names? And he's like, oh, it's because we're Christian. Like, I grew up Christian. And I was like, what the fuck?
Whoa.
It was so crazy, because, like, my mum's side of the family is Hindu, so, but we were never raised religiously. And now I know why, because they had an interfaith marriage, and that's why my mum got disowned. And then she got re-owned when she had my brother. But yeah, it was such a crazy revelation. And, you know, like, so my auntie, like, passed away a few years ago, like, my dad's sister. So we went back, I mean, and I went back to India, finally, because, like, I can afford to get tickets now. And we were looking through her stuff and they were like these Bibles, this old cross, which I'm like wearing now. And like, it was just so crazy. And then, yeah, my grandmother, I found some of her pins. So she was a nurse. And it would have been during World War II because she was like, she was born in like the 1920s and then she was a nurse by then. So I found these old pins and like what kind of look like medals, but I don't think they are. And I just got like, yeah, and then I found this so many photographs, because turns out my grandfather, my dad's father, was like an avid photographer.
It's in your blood.
It's in my blood. And then I found his old like diplomas, like his, and he studied English.
Whoa.
Like he has like a major in like English literature, and like he used to teach, and apparently he used to write letters and like keep a journal like religiously. And then my dad, when he went back to India after he passed away, he, like, destroyed all those journals and letters. Because he was like, oh, it was private information. I was like, those were like primary historical documents. Like, what is wrong with you? And apparently he'd even written about him getting married to my grandmother in a church. And it was like just the two of them and two witnesses. And I'm like, wow, you've just destroyed like this amazing, wow, like archival, like, you know. Sorry, I'm just getting mad now. But anyway, how did I get off on that tangent? Oh yeah,
your history.
Yeah, so literally just by asking my dad, like, what was her name and like where was she born, and he said she was born in Ranikheth, which is a hill station, and like, yeah, apparently her family, like, they used to be farmers around that area, and she grew up there, and then she moved to Lucknow, like, that's where she met my granddad and stuff. But yeah, I've just discovered all this stuff, and I feel like this play is sort of like me trying to get in touch with that. Like, I just treated this trip to India like a research trip. So we like went to the hills, like spent like, we did like a road trip through them with my mom, me and Calvin, I mean. And awesome. We went to Ranikheth, and there was like two churches there. And we were looking, well, I was looking for her birth record, because I was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, we could find this? And like, just our luck, like the one, we were only there for 2 days, because of just how our schedule was. And like both the fathers of the churches were like away during that time. It was like, oh, so ridiculous. But we met some really nice people, and I like left a letter there and asking like, you know, hey, like if you can find it, it would be great. So let's see if that turns anything up. But yeah, it was cool, because, you know, like, I like traveling, but like with a, like, and I came up with, like, because I've been obsessed with Baldur's Gate recently, which is a video game. I was like, this is a quest. This is the main quest.
Yeah.
So I love going to somewhere with having like a quest in mind, and then you do these like side quests where you're like, oh, like I met, we need to go shopping for some lettuce or something like that. Or like,
yeah.
You know, like all these side adventures open up while you're on your main quest. So we didn't complete the main quest, but we did have a lot of fun side quests.
Cool.
Along the way. Are you into Baldur's Gate?
I don't have the game, but I've been served a lot of Baldur's Gate content on TikTok. Like, oh, a lot. Like, oh, I know, God. I've seen a lot of scenes that make me raise my eyebrow.
Make you blush a little bit?
I'm like, what is like, this game? Maybe.
Oh my God.
If I didn't have a full-time job could do whatever I want, I would definitely be spending it probably... playing games like that, because from what I've seen, like, there's a bear, there's a scene that I'm
you
like,
you can fuck a bear. What? Yeah, it's true. It's true. Like, I haven't done it personally myself.
And he's like a tentacle dude. I'm like,
oh, what? Oh, the possibilities are almost endless.
Yes, yeah, so I've seen a lot. Yeah. I've seen a lot of content.
But... yeah, I would highly recommend it. It is very addictive, though. Yeah, if you have a job,
yeah. Because I do,
it might ruin your life.
I will.
Are you into gaming?
I don't game at the moment. So I grew up, we'd always have a console.
What did you used to play?
I'm old, okay. So it was like, I was very influenced by my brother on a console.
Mm.
So it'd be like Crash Bandicoot, Need for Speed Underground 2.
Oh, nice.
We did go through a phase. This is when internet cafes were a thing.
Oh my God, yeah.
I used to go with my brother and his friends to play Counter-Strike.
Ah, nice.
But it was like Halo and yeah. God of War. That sort of stuff.
All classics. Are you like into gaming now?
I don't do that now.
You don't do it now?
No.
Oh. You like, gave me gaming energy.
Well,
like, I feel like you'd be really into it.
I don't know, but my current obsession is reading romance fiction.
Oh my God, yes.
Okay. So yes. I don't have any more hours a day.
What kind of stuff are you into with romance fiction?
I will change genres. I'll go like, I'll stick with the genre and then I'll switch.
Mm.
So this weekend I've read like, have you ever read Lee Child or Matthew Riley?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like that, but it's romance.
That's cool.
It's like an archaeologist and gets into some bad shit. So she has to be, you know.
Oh God. It's just like crash landing on you. It's just like...
yeah. So it'll be that, or I'll read like, there'll be like a dystopian romance, or ooh, it'll be... fantasy.
I was going to ask if you're into fantasy romance. Mm. Have you heard of Nalini Singh?
Mate.
My
fucking massive. I have read... Why?
I've only read Angel's Blood, And no. I read it in a plane next to my mum when we were going to India. And I was like, I was sitting next to my mother reading this. And I was like, this is very...
Okay, so she's got a series. It's called the Side-Changing series. It's not, she's got a couple series. But I don't really like reading contemporary romance, which is like normal modern day. That's probably my least favourite. I'm like, give me something that is so far out of reality.
Because it's escapism,
so
right?
It's like Shifter. It's she's created this world. It's really good. It's like 20 books, something like that. I'm a massive fan. She's going to be at Auckland Writers Festival this year.
Oh my god, no way.
She's on a panel. I'm a massive fan.
Oh my god, slay.
Yeah.
I think she is so... Do you agree? Like, I feel like she's really underrated.
Okay, so I'm in the romance books subreddit. She is massive internationally.
Right? Like internationally, she's known so well, but, like, literally no one here knows about her.
That's because because romance as a genre gets, shat on.
It's seen as, like, lowbrow, and I'm like, oh, yes, anything, like, woman-like, especially young woman, I feel like is always shat on. Boy bands, K-pop... Yeah. Romance as a genre, anything young woman like is just automatically lowbrow.
I think it's kind of changing. Yeah, I think it's kind of changing now with BookTok and Gen Z.
I've heard.
Fucking keeping books alive. But she is, Nalini Singh is like huge. Any conversation about urban fantasy, she's always mentioned.
That's amazing. And I'm so proud.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. I'm glad she gets her flowers, like, internationally.
Yeah.
And, oh my god, I'd love to meet her. Can we go together? I need her to sign my book.
Oh, that's so funny, you're reading that with your mum.
Oh my god, iconic. I know, it was so... it was one of those moments where I'm like, I hope no one can read my mind.
Yeah, but she's written some of my favourite male main characters. Yeah.
Your favorite what, sorry?
Male main characters. MMCs, if you're...
It's amazing, like, women are so great at writing men, but I can't say the same for men writing women. But anyway.
Anyway. Love her. Okay. You made history as the first South Asian female playwright to be commissioned by Auckland Theatre Company. I read that you didn't actually know that was the case at first.
Yeah.
Was there pressure that went along with that?
That's like an understatement. Pressure is an understatement. Oh my god. Yeah, and allegedly, like, please, anyone out there, correct me if we are wrong, but yeah, as far as we know, like, first South Asian female playwright to be commissioned in the country by a main stage production theatre company. Safer to say Auckland Theatre Company specifically, but I think in the whole country, like, by a mainstream, like, theatre company. Yeah, and I didn't know that till we were already a few months into it when, you know, I think they started to think about, oh, how can we market the play? And that was just one of the facts that came up. And oh my god, like, holy shit. Like, not only was I a first-time playwright, but now I had this huge, I don't want to say, I guess, it felt kind of like a responsibility where I was like, oh, I just can't fuck this up, you know? And it was, oh my god, so much pressure. Like, I literally would wake up with, like, stomach pains. Like, it was crazy. Like, I didn't sleep. Like, literally, like, I would wake up. I would, like, make a coffee. I would literally pray. Like, I don't usually pray and stuff. But, like, I have, like, the statue of Ganesh in my house that someone gifted me. I would do this ritual. Because it's the only thing that kept me, like, tethered to reality. I just did this little ritual where I, like, lit some incense, you know, rung a bell, and I was like, please, please, just help me write this play. And then I, like, sit down and, like, just write for 10 hours. And then, like, not move, basically, which is so bad for you. I know, Marwan's gonna be like, ah! And then, like, just to stay sane, I would, like, every day I would, like, religiously go for a walk, like, in the park for an hour. And then I'd, like, come home, make dinner, do some more writing, and sleep. And I literally did this for, like, 2 or 3 months, like, it was insane. It was so bad. I would not recommend anyone ever do this ever. But sorry, I just went off on a tangent. It was a lot of pressure. And Yeah, I guess on so many levels, it's like, I feel like Jonathan and Anna, who are amazing, and they were like always so supportive, and Swims as well. Everyone was so nice and supportive and like trying to protect me from like the pressures of it. But yeah, I just felt like, oh man, like I'm a first time playwright. I'm apparently the first South Asian female playwright to be commissioned. Like, I just have to like do a good job. Otherwise, you know, it's like that whole like burden of representation. It's like, yeah, if I fuck up, then they're less likely to give someone else an opportunity in the future, which might not even be true, but it's like how we all feel, right? Like in our industry, like, we always put this pressure on ourselves. And I feel like it's kind of dumb because it's like we keep making work and it's amazing and great. And I feel like this pressure just never goes away. It's like, yeah, the next person's going to... Yeah, when will it end? The next person's going to be like, oh, I'm the second one. And then you know, they'll be like, oh, I'm the first, like, Bengali or Punjabi or, like, South Indian or whatever, whatever, you know? It's just always, like, first. It just puts... It's cool in some ways, but also it's so much pressure. Mm. Yeah, but anyway, it ended up being great because I had, like, an amazing team and, like, Ahi.
It was so great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I was like...
The vibe was great. Everyone was so excited. The actual show itself was great. It was funny and exciting. And then when you leave, like, in the... What do you call it? In the...
Like, foyer?
Yes, or? That's the one. Yeah, the vibe is just... Everyone was buzzing.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Yeah. I'm glad. And that's all I wanted. Like, I was like, I just want people to have a good time, and I just want the actors to have a good time, and you know, because like I feel like a lot of our stories can be like quite heavy, and you know, I just wanted to make something that was kind of like lighthearted,
and it was refreshing. Yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm glad. I was like, look, you know, for a first play, I was like, I think it was okay.
And so, do you think? So your next one is going to be something completely different?
Yeah. It's going to be like I said, it's like a horror. Yeah. Play. And
do you like horror as a genre?
I used to, when I was young, I used to be so messed up. I was like into like gory, like, you know, Saw and like all this like fucked up shit, which now I'm like, I do not have the stomach for that. I'm like, this is just... Also, I think films have just gotten so like gratuitous and like it's weirdly like, it's almost like torture porn-esque, some of that stuff. Anyway, not anymore, but I do love a good thriller. So, like, you know, stuff like Shutter Island, The Prestige, like, you know, psychological thrillers I really still like and I can still stomach. I think I was talking to a friend about this. I think Rashidi also does this. It's like, I feel like when you grow up in like a, at least in a South Asian, and again, I'm just speaking from my personal experience. Maybe it's not for everyone. But basically when I was growing up in our family, like, it was just kind of accepted that there's another layer to reality. The spiritual, like, whether it's ghosts or entities or, you know, even praying and ritual and all that sort of stuff. It was so folded into, like, the fabric of everyday life. Like, you never questioned it. Mm. That's something I sort of miss in New Zealand. But, you know, I guess I have my own thoughts about that. So anyway, because I like that, I want to try write something like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the creative community at the moment?
I don't know. How do you feel?
Well, the thing is, I don't really feel like I'm in it. I'm kind of like on the...
Oh, really?
You don't
think so?
Well, I'm not. I'm kind of... I feel like I'm maybe on the borders of it just because of the people that I know and I'm friends with. But I don't feel like... I mean, and that's fine. I don't have like an issue with that. So yeah, I don't really know. So I'm asking you as someone who I would assume feels like they're in it.
Oh man, I think, and you know, just speaking from my perspective,
yeah,
things just feel very slow for everyone at the moment, and you know, obviously I think that's because of the economy is just slowing down, and we knew this was going to happen. Like, I think when, you know, we were doing all that stuff during the pandemic and lockdowns, you know, yeah, we all knew like we were gonna have to pay back for that at some point, so this is just happening, right? And like, you know, like the war in Gaza and like Ukraine and all this other stuff happening across the world is like obviously having a huge impact on the global economy. So yeah, I feel like that's obviously like a big thing, is just like, yeah, the economy just sucks. Also, like, I think spiritually, like, I think maybe the world's just, I think people are just waking up to like all the propaganda we've just been fed for so long. And it's kind of disheartening, I guess. Even when you think about, like, the multiple genocides that are happening.
Yeah, in real time that in, we can watch.
Yeah, and you're, like, watching it through your phone screen. Mm. And it's, like, you're doing protests, you're donating, you're, like, speaking out about it. It's, like, nothing is happening.
Mm.
And I feel like there's just this, like, disillusionment. You know, when you feel like you think you live in a democracy, but, you know, the reality is something completely different. And, you know, I think we've known this for ages, but it's, like, it's just so visceral at the moment.
Mm.
So, yeah, on a spiritual level, like, I feel like everyone's kind of, I don't know, flat. It's a bit of a downer. light way of putting it. And, you know, even with New Zealand's, like, current government, like, what can I say? Mm. Like, questioning the treaty.
Yeah.
Like, just attacking people's, like, attacking the most vulnerable people in society, right?
Mm.
And, oh, where was I going with this?
How you're describing it, I get it, yeah.
Yeah. So, in a nutshell, I feel like things are just slow on, and maybe a bit bleak on, like, many levels. But at the same time, I feel like, as usual, artists and creatives are still working really hard. We're, like, coming together, creating communities, supporting each other, still making work, like, that's political, that's joyful. And this is the other thing, like, which I like to keep, you know, I see it on online and also in real life, is, like, yeah, being able to, like, still have joy as, like, a form of resistance, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I think the most important thing is, like, is to get out and touch grass. And, like, one of my mentors once said, like, yeah, like, think globally but act locally, right? So it's, like, yeah, be aware of all these global issues, but on the ground it's what can you do in your own community that's going to have an impact. So it's, like, you know, checking in on your friends, getting together, you know, because I think a lot of people feel...
Like,
yeah,
like talking with your friends.
Yeah.
As a starting point.
I think so. I think a lot of people feel very lonely these days. And even just, like, checking in on people, hanging out with them, like, face-to-face if you can, I think it makes a big difference, and it sort of keeps you, I don't know, resilient as a human, I think.
That's actually related to another question I was going to ask you.
Mm.
Related to, yeah, because I said before when I listened to your interview with Kim Hill, we spoke about being bullied and having solitude growing up.
Mm.
So how are you now as an adult with being alone and loneliness?
This is going to sound maybe not great, but, like, I feel like because of my childhood, I just got really used to, like, being lonely or being alone, I should say. So I'm actually pretty all good with just being by myself. Actually, I really like solitude.
Me too.
Oh, well. Just alone, reading our Nalini Singh books. Yes, like,
I love it. And so, but at the same time, I can empathize. Like, I know that lots of people, and I know that, like, it's got, like, with men, there's, like, a loneliness issue.
Epidemic.
Yeah. But I really like being by myself. Yeah.
Which is, I mean... Again, it sounds messed up, but I, like, loved the lockdowns because I was like, I just got to be by myself. It was amazing.
Being in isolation, I'm like, yeah, okay.
And I feel like, obviously, it helps knowing that, like, when you're ready to socialize, you can go out there and socialize with people, right? But I think it's a really important skill to, like, cultivate because I know a lot of people, like being alone and being lonely, like, they're not the same thing, you know? Mm. And I think, like, being okay with your own company is, like, a really important thing to cultivate as an adult.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's just going to be some times in your life where you can't avoid it. And, I know a lot of people who just, like, can't, like, hate being alone because they don't want to think.
Me too.
You know? Which is really sad.
I know a lot of people. Sorry, I just totally spoke over you.
No.
I know a lot of people, not a lot of people, but I know people who have issues with being alone, and so they'll surround themselves with assholes when they should probably be alone instead.
Oh my God.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's the worst thing, is like when you'll take any company,
yeah,
you know?
It's like, that is toxic.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just, I guess humans are like social creatures, right? Mm. So it's almost better to have that kind of pain in, like, a social setting rather than, like, be by yourself and have that pain. I don't know. Like, it was sort of forced on me when I was younger, and I just kind of, yeah, just got used to it. And my mom had a big part in, like, helping me. Like, she didn't know what was happening, obviously. But, you know, she got into all her, like, spirituality and Buddhism and all that, like, during that time. And yeah, she was just, she just gave me some really good advice. She was like, you know, like, and I guess it's like that Buddhist thing of like, oh, you can't, like, you can't actually control what's out there, right? Right? Like, the only thing you can control is, like, your inner world, like, your perspective and your thoughts. So the more you go inwards and you focus on your perspective on things, regulating your emotions, like, breaking negative thought patterns, all that sort of stuff, like, the more content you actually become, like, being by yourself, like, the more you understand yourself, like, the easier it is to be alone. Because I feel like when you're alone and you don't like your own thoughts, like, I feel like people don't like being alone because they don't like their own thoughts or they don't like themselves. And obviously, like, that's terrible and, you know, but it is something you can change. Like, you can learn to like yourself. So, yeah, did you ever have this experience? I don't know. I know I'm just like...
Yeah, that's funny. So thinking about, you know, we were talking about finding your voice. For me, what helped me find my voice is doing that inner work, figuring out why am I responding, what makes me uncomfortable about this, getting curious about my responses to things instead of being like, just, oh, she's a fucking asshole, or, you know, instead of it being like all their issue, kind of being like, why, what's going on here, how do I feel about this, do I really feel like this, what's going on in my body. That was like a major one. I remember when someone asked me, how do you feel in your body, and I'm like, what? You're telling me that there's sensations happening below my head? Because
My god, literally.
And I think that's me. That's an issue. I think I've come across people who have been to therapy and it's like they're super self-aware and they'll intellectualize their feelings, but when it's like, how do you actually feel, like, they're not getting into the feeling bit in the body.
I relate to that so much. Like, I, you know how they talk about like mind muscle connection, especially when you're working out? And like, again, I keep bringing it back to like working out with Marlon. But like, every time I'd lift something, he'd be like, where did you feel that? And I like really had to think about it, like really hard. Cause I'm like, oh my God, I dissociate so much from like my own body.
Yeah. As when we're growing up, you know, as a baby, you're like, so you're so in your body, and then as you are conditioned to be in your head.
So
I think as we grow up and we are like adults, we have to learn how to actually listen, connect to that again, the sensations in our body again.
Yeah,
otherwise we're just totally like walking around numb.
Yeah, like on autopilot, right? And that's so true. Like, we're so out of touch with like when we're hungry, when we need to sleep, like, just when we're sore from, like, sitting in the same position for so long. Like, we're so out of touch with our bodies. And literally, like, working out has really helped me, like, connect back to my body. And I think it really does help with your fucking mental clarity as well. And I don't want to be, like, I just don't want to be, like, just go get therapy. Because I'm, like, I don't think that's the solution. Because, like, I've been reading a lot of discourse online, which is just, like, yeah, like, Western therapy and wellness is so, like, hyper-individualistic, which is just, like, you're just thinking about, these are my boundaries, and no one can cross them, and, you know... completely disconnecting yourself from everyone else around you, or being like, I'm just gonna cut this person off because this relationship is toxic. Like, obviously I'm not promoting that. Sometimes you really do have to work a lot in your relationships, because like, we are like, we're humans, like, we exist in like communities, right? And I think it's worth working through issues with, like, you know, your friends and partners and parents and all that sort of stuff. So again, I think it's just about balance, right? It's like, yeah, like, being an individual and you're doing like going within and doing the inner work, and like also at the same time like working on, you know, solidifying your relationships or like keeping in touch with friends or family or whatever. Like, one of my old high school teachers used to say, he's like, friendship is like a plant, you have to water it for it to grow. So like, I totally think, but you just have to develop your discernment. I'm like, some relationships, and I feel like for a lot of South Asians, they stay in like really toxic dynamics with friends or family just because that's what is expected of them. And like, for me personally, like, I have just cut people out of my life, like, whether that's friends or family, where I'm just like, this is never going to get better and you're always going to be toxic, so there's no point to this. to be honest. So I've straight up just cut people, and I've gotten really good at that. But yeah,
love that for you.
I know. Yeah,
it is good. It is good when you start doing
it's a
that.
Good skill to develop, honestly. Mm. And I highly recommend it. But obviously I know that's not possible for everyone, but yeah, like, cut people out of your life that you don't need, but then you have the energy to really focus on the relationships that you do want to improve, right?
You're creating space for,
yeah, know, oh my god, yes. Oh my god, it's just like Marie Kondo, like creating space for things that spark joy. Yeah, yeah. I don't know where I was going with that. But basically, like, I really do think that, as cheesy as it sounds, like, yeah, going within and understanding yourself is, like, really key to just being happy with
your own company. Yeah, but also at the same time, you're talking about community and considering where you fit in the bigger system of things.
Mm.
Well, I think the gold is in you're doing your own self, you're doing your self inquiry. But also being generous and, okay, who do I want to connect with? Who can I connect? How do I also feed a community? Whether that's a bigger community or it's your friendship community, whatever.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, just always remembering that, like, there are people around you and thinking about, like, how can I just help people around me, I think is important.
Mm.
Yeah. It just comes back to balance, right? It's like, yeah, you have to look after yourself. You have to help yourself, so, you know, you have the energy to be able to, like, contribute to your community, right?
And then I keep referring to this interview with Kim Hill.
Oh my god, I was so scared before going on that interview.
Were you?
I was just like, oh my god, she's just like,
that is amazing.
Savage, you know? Like, you know, she's great, but
intimidating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she was actually really easy to talk to.
So that's actually where I learned how old you were. But in it, at the end, it sounded like you wanted more to show for being 27. Do you remember this?
Oh my god. Yeah, yeah.
You kind of were like, you know, 30's coming. Do you still feel like that?
Yeah, 100%. I just don't know. It's like this obsession in our culture with, like, having to be, like, exceptional in your 20s. Like, the younger you are, like, you know, like, oh, these authors, like, I don't know, fucking Mary Shelley, she wrote Frankenstein when she was, like, fuck, I don't know, 20 or something like that. I'm probably, like, butchering that fact.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, like, people, like, our culture is, like, obsessed with young people who are exceptional, and they're just, like, the 0.5% of the human population. So yeah, I think you're like, when you're in your 20s, or like even when you're a teenager, you just feel like you have to achieve something amazing by like a certain milestone, and it's like completely dumb, because I know plenty of people who have like done their PhDs like when they're 40, and like, you know, or just done whatever, like, you know, at different stages in their life. So I can say it again on an intellectual level, right? I can be like, there's no timeline to life, but like the kind of fucking feels like there is, eh? Like, at least the way our culture is so, like, hyper-fixated on, like, youth. So, yeah, like, even now, I'm just like, oh, my God, I haven't done anything, like, useful with my life. Yeah, it's so crazy. And I'm like, I guess I have, like, but have I? Wow. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I guess it depends on how you're judging yourself.
I'm just like, I should be speaking 7 languages and have $1 million and, like, be able to do, like, 5 pull-ups, you know? Oh, wow. Or seen the whole world, and
yeah.
I should have done all of this, and time's running out. I think that's my greatest fear is, like, not reaching my potential in this life. And, like, that fear, and I just constantly am thinking, like, oh my god, time is running out. Which, I don't know if this is a healthy mindset, but yeah, I just feel like
there's not a lot of pressure, man.
I know, that, yeah, it's not healthy. It's not healthy, yeah, yeah. It's just like, and I guess it's not healthy. They call it like a legacy project or a mortality legacy? Yeah, I think.
Are you thinking about what kind of legacy you want to leave?
No, there's just this concept. I don't know where I read it. It might have been in that book, like, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which is just like, ugh. But anyway, it made some good points. But yeah, it was basically, like, talking about humans are, like, obsessed with legacy projects. Like, why do we build buildings?
That's
and
so true.
Why do we conquer? And why do we amass wealth and do all this stuff? It's like, because we actually, like, have this huge, crushing fear of death. And so all our lives are working towards a legacy. It's like, how will you be remembered? And like being remembered is sort of like living forever, right? So we obsess and create a lot of pain and suffering because of wanting to leave like a legacy. And yeah, like maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should just chill out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, and in some ways, you know, you could say like, oh, helping someone, saving a life, like that is leaving a legacy, right? Mm. Like even if you can make a difference within your own community or family or friends or whatever, like that's having a legacy. Yeah. And maybe that's good enough. But for some reason, we're like, I have to do something epic.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Especially as artists, like, I guess we just want to be remembered or known or, like, validated. I don't know.
That's really interesting. You're not the first person I've spoken to who feels like time is running out and they have to, like, do all this stuff.
I feel like a lot of creatives, like, have this feeling. Because when you start to do the maths and you're like, okay, if I could make a feature film, realistically, how long does it take? Like maybe 5 years, if you're lucky. And my career is gonna last till what? I'm like 60. You're just like, wait, how many films am I gonna make ever? That's like what? I'm shit at maths. Like, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4.
I don't know.
Like 8, 10, by the time I'm like considered like old and irrelevant. And like you're just like, that's actually not a lot of stuff. That's not a lot of films. If I could write a novel like every year, which is crazy, like maybe if you're lucky again, okay, maybe I could write a novel every 3 years at the peak of my relevance, you know? Like how many novels is like actually like what, 10, 15, 20? Like it's not a lot. Like it's really not a lot when you think about it. And you're just like, ah, fuck. And then you, on top of that, you have other interests. It's like, I'm not just going to write a novel, right? Or make a film. Like, I'm going to do, like, 10 different things.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, oh, my God, like, how many plays? How many this? How many that? You know? It just starts, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not thinking about this every day.
Do you think you're going to have a freak out when you're 10:30?
Oh, my God. If I don't have my license by the time I'm 30, I think I'm going to be... I'm going to be like, oh my God, I failed myself. Even though I know a lot of people who are like older and don't have their license or get their license later. But I think in some ways I'll probably not freak out. I probably will just hopefully enter a new phase of consciousness. Like hopefully
I elevate.
Like I'll like, yeah. Like I'll evolve like a Pokemon. Yeah. And I'll just be like, oh, like the world didn't implode and I'm still alive, hopefully. And I'll just be like, oh, cool. Like, life just goes on. This is what I'm hoping.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I think
so. Yeah. Well, you as a... as an elder. Yeah.
As an elder. Yeah, I think 30s are sick. Yeah, that is what happens, I feel.
Yeah.
I'm actually getting to that point where... You know how... You see those older women and they kind of don't give a fuck?
Oh, I love that.
I can see how that happens. Because suddenly you're kind of... not in the relevant or cool generation anymore.
Mm.
And then you can just do whatever the fuck you want.
Mm. That sounds amazing. I want to get like to that
I'm
point.
I'm seeing it soon. It's around the corner. But I'm starting to feel, oh, I get that kind of. Mm.
That's great. Like, but so you feel like you have stuff to look forward to and...
Well, yeah. I did have stuff to look forward to. Like, you've got to have stuff to look forward to. Whether that's simply the next phase of your life, but also being grateful for where you are now. Like, okay, this is where shit's at now. Okay, cool.
That's the thing, like being grateful, just being like, wow, I like to grow old. And like, that's pretty amazing in itself.
Yeah.
Do you feel like as you, not get older, but you know.
Because I get older.
Yeah, as you get older, do you feel like.
You're pushing 40.
Yeah. As an elder, do you feel like as you get older, there's like less, you put less pressure on yourself to like achieve these lofty, maybe unrealistic goals you had when you were younger or to hit certain milestones or I don't know?
Yes, or the milestones become different. I think when I was in my 20s, I had a lot of anxiety about things.
Like what?
Just worried about stuff like stressing. I'd be like, work, oh my God. And because I was such a people pleaser, I'd be really over-efforting at work. And now I'm like, you're not being paid for those fucking how many other hours you're doing.
Do you feel like you value yourself more?
Yeah. Hugely. So much more. But yeah, in my 20s, it was like, yeah, there was just worry about doing the wrong thing. And it was also because I was in a relationship at the time. It was like, oh, okay, what do I think we're going to, okay, so we're going to get married. Like, what's the plan? It was always like, what's the plan? And I think in my 30s, I've definitely eased off. Not to say that I'm not ambitious, but it's important for me to be grateful where I'm at and enjoy it. Where are you at with self-love and self-compassion?
Ooh, good question. I'm trying to frame the current phase in my life as like entering my villain era. So, and I feel like a lot of people are doing this, but I feel like I just used to be a massive people pleaser, and I have been working on that and kind of CBTing myself, you know, like just becoming aware of my like negative passions and just changing them. And even though like I wouldn't be like, oh, like I love myself and I'm the most confident, best version of myself at the moment, I feel like I've slowly been getting there. Yeah, just by allowing myself to, yeah, just be kind of just putting myself, like making myself a priority, I guess. And to me, that's like entering my villain era. Like, oh, Ankita, you don't have to like destroy yourself to please other people. Like saying no is like so evil, you know, but like I have to frame it like that in my mind, yeah. You know, like prioritizing myself is like such a big fucking deal.
It can,
you know,
feel super radical if you spend.
Yeah.
So long not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, I'm such a bitch now, but really I'm just like creating healthy boundaries.
I love this.
But I kinda love it. I'm like, oh, I'm embracing the shadow self is how I put it. Yeah. So, and honestly, like working out consistently, like again, going to Marlin, I'm just like his biggest fan.
Yeah.
Like for real. But like just doing that regularly. Even going back to, like, drawing, which is, like, something I always did as a kid, like, you know, it was just, like, my outlet, like, creative outlet when I was growing up. And I was just like, oh, like, I'll never be good enough to make a career out of this or anything. So at some point I just stopped. But, like, recently, now that I'm, like, sort of financially stable and sort of getting, like, more established and stuff, I've weirdly been going back to the things that I loved as a kid.
Yeah.
Like drawing and video game gaming and yeah, just like having hobbies and enjoying myself and like making myself a priority, just doing these little things. I feel so much more content now than I did like a few years ago. So yeah, like even though like I totally am, there's still a lot of work to do, but I feel like I'm making good progress. Yeah. And it's just, like, such simple things, eh? It seems so, that's the thing, like, simple things are, like, the hardest to do, you know? Like, simple dishes are the most delicious. I don't know, that was lame.
I agree, though.
But, yeah, even in design, you can be, like, yeah, paring back and, you know, the...
Yeah.
Sort of is, like, editing is, like, the hardest thing to do, so, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I feel like we're getting there.
How spiritual would you say you are?
I would say I'm pretty spiritual, to be honest. And I wouldn't say I'm religious. Like, I don't feel like I have to go to a place of worship to have a connection with myself or, like, a higher power. But, yeah, I would say I'm pretty spiritual. Like, yeah, I believe in, like, you know, there's more to this reality than we can observe. And I think that's just true, isn't it? Like, even from a scientific point, it's like, yeah, we have six senses, like, we need all this technology to be able to see different spectrums of light, and we don't understand, like, the universe completely. Like, there's many, many things that are still a mystery, and that's great. Yeah, there's just more stuff to discover, and I just feel like there's more to life than, yeah, what you can see and touch. And I think spirituality is also about, like, just understanding yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I would say I'm pretty spiritual. And I think it, I don't know, I feel like people should try it. Don't knock it till you try it. You know, even if you like believe, you're like very scientific and effects driven person. Yeah, you don't have to believe in like manifestation and universal energies or God or whatever. I think spirituality is like a very personal thing, and it's just, I think, and the way I define spirituality is like an understanding of the self. And I think realizing, or not realizing, but just being aware of the fact that, like, you're not, how do I phrase this? Like, you know that saying, like, no man is an island?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all exist in an ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
Like, we exist within nature, we exist within a society, a community. And I think part of spirituality is just, like, paying attention to that.
Yeah.
It's like, you exist within, you know?
Yes.
This ecosystem.
Yes.
And just, like, fucking respect it.
Great answer.
I don't know.
So good. Okay.
I feel like I've just been on so many tangents. Oh my God. Was this interesting?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, I feel like I have to come and, like, say something, like, intellectual.
No, I definitely don't. I actually don't.
And I'm just like, just read Smut, guys.
I know.
Like, if there's anything you take away from this, just read some Smut.
No. I don't want to have, like, every conversation to be, like, a super, like, intelligent fucking TED Talk thing. Mm, like, because I'm just not like that. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, outside of work, I want to have, like, no brain time. Like, can we just, let's just talk about monster porn. Like,
yes! Oh my God, you have to play Baldur's Gate. I'm sorry. Like, you have to play.
Yeah, so I, yeah, so no, it's been great.
Okay.
To talk, yeah.
Yeah.
Finish these sentences.
Oh, okay. Oh my God.
I'm feeling inspired by
Baldur's Gate. Just video games, man. They're great. They're such a great medium of storytelling. Yeah, if I'm being honest. Again, just getting in touch with the inner child. I don't know. Gaming is inspiring.
I'm really looking forward to.
I guess I'm just looking forward to kind of working on my play and getting in the room again with, like, a bunch of mates and being creative. Yeah, and we're not just waiting around for funding as well, which I love. I'm just like, yeah, we're just gonna do it. So yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to that. Yeah,
cool. I'd love to be known for,
oh man, writing good. No, I would love to be known for, honestly, kind of like making cool genre work. Mm-hmm. I think that's, like, my main focus at the moment, is making cool genre, like, films and plays and hopefully comics as well. So yeah, I think I would like to be known for that. Yeah,
cool. That's it.
I don't know.
Thank you. Okay, no, that was great. You do know.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming in for a chat.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me. Oh my God, yay.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
This episode was made possible thanks to Foundation North, Creative New Zealand, and Big Fan. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe, share, and review the podcast, and stay tuned for updates. See you next time.